Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
Welcome back to SWITCHCAST Season 6. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt. I'm here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders. We're the automotive news and entertainment show that's not just for car people. In fact, it's better if you're not a car person or super nerdy car person, so then you don't catch our mistakes. And
we might sound smart occasionally.
We do sound really smart to people who don't know anything about cars. Well, I'm speaking for myself anyway. If you enjoy this podcast, please help us out with the algorithms. Like, subscribe, share, review wherever you are listening to our show. It all helps with the algorithms and helps other people see the podcast, which ensures that we'll be around for at least one more episode.
Hey, we take it one episode at a time around here.
What are we talking about today?
Ooh, boy, I think you put the document together.
I know.
We talked about lessons you've learned last time.
Yes. 20 years in the car business. I had some incredible wisdom to share. And then in the last 2 weeks, I figured out all the stuff that I haven't yet learned or still haven't learned or have yet to learn in the car business. Because we made a lot of amateur mistakes. It helps that customers never change and they are always, well, there's a term in the car industry, buyers are liars. And that sort of proved true, but we can really only blame ourselves for all these foibles that we did this week. So, number one, we bought a car with a bad gearbox.
Nice.
Second gear in a BMW.
All right.
It's the second one in a year. It was about a year ago. We bought a Porsche Boxster that had a bad second gear also. But this one was, well, I guess we should have known it wasn't adult owned. It was the guy's son's car.
Yeah.
But it did have a BMW Car Club of America sticker on it. And that, you know, that's supposed to mean the car is good, at least with the PCA. You know, it's like, well, are they a PCA member? Oh, it's good then.
Yeah.
They take care of their cars because they're a PCA member. Anyway, when we went back to the dad who sold the car to us, and our buyer was like, hey, like, I drove this as soon as we got it, and it never goes into second gear. Like, it grinds every single time. How did you not know about this? Rhetorical question. And the guy was like, yeah, you need to be real careful who you go accusing of things.
Oh, whoa.
We're like, I'm sorry, you sold us a car with a bad second gear, and there's no way possible you didn't know about it.
Yeah.
He's like, well, you could have come to look at it. I'm like, fair point. Yes, we could have, but that doesn't mean I can push a car off a cliff and sell it to you and be like, well, you could have come to look at it.
Yeah. It's a little weird.
So, yeah. I don't even know what we learned there other than it reinforced that people are just as bad as car dealers. Individuals are just as bad.
So if you would have bought this and it would have arrived, and as soon as you got in it, you know, grindy, could you have done something to undo the deal, or is it still just it's done?
Dealers have absolutely zero recourse against anyone who sells them the car. And if we did take anyone to court, we would probably lose if it was a jury trial, because juries have absolutely zero sympathy. I shouldn't say jury. People have absolutely zero sympathy for any time a car dealer loses on anything. And I've played up on this because now anytime something bad happens at the car dealer where we screw up, I make videos about it because everybody on social media loves to see us lose.
Yeah. Well, because you're just a rich dealer with gobs of money. You can take one on the
chin
for the
little only made by lowballing people and ripping them off and hiding issues. Yeah. Needless to say, we will fix second gear on this, rebuild the gearbox, new synchros, whatever it actually needs, and sell it proper, whether we win or lose. We bought a car that the VIN didn't match the title.
Oh, nice.
Yep. Not stolen or anything. It was just a clerical error, whereas they put TL instead of LT. 15 years ago, and somehow it made it through two separate states this way.
Wow.
But when it comes to Ohio, we have to do a VIN inspection. Our wonderful title clerk, who's also super hot.
Nice.
Especially when she's looking at those VINs, checking those numbers.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Doug, do you get out very much anymore?
I just got back from Scotland. Come on. Of course I get out. With my title clerk, actually.
So, whoa.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Anyway, yeah, it somehow made it through all these states, all these registrations, never got corrected, comes here. We have to do a VIN inspection. She's like, hey, these aren't right. And that's actually a really good thing that Ohio requires dealers to title vehicles this way, because otherwise I've seen cars go through like five different reassignments in four different states, dealer to dealer to dealer. And there's an error that traces back to the first one, and you have to go back to them and hope they're still in business to get the issue fixed. Whereas when it comes to us, we have to title it. So it's like a restart. If there's any issues, they have to get addressed before we resell the car.
A pain for you, but probably good overall.
Oh, yeah. And it's great, too, because we have to schedule a Highway Patrol VIN inspection, which the first available appointment was July 11th, I think. And nice. Then we checked with Michigan and said, okay, once we get this back to you, what's the turnaround time? And they said, well, we're about 3 to 4 weeks out. We have a pretty big backlog right now. So 2 months we have to sit on this car, can't nice. Sell it. Thankfully, it was a really cheap car. But that goes back to why we don't leverage ourselves. Because imagine if you had put that car on floor plan. Well, floor plan company probably wouldn't have accepted it because they would have caught the error before they funded it, which we should have done, but we didn't. You know, your eyes trick you, right? You see things and you, like those suggestive tests they do where they leave out letters and your mind still reads the sentence. When you have the correct two letters that are just transposed, your eyes don't see it.
Yeah, for sure.
So anyway, 2 months later, we'll get a title. But again, this is why we don't floor plan, why we don't leverage. Because if this was a $200,000 car we had on payments, like that could sink a dealer if they were running real tight.
Yes.
Here's a good one. We build out a we build out a customer for $5,000 less than we agreed upon.
Oh, nice. Bonus. I'm guessing you can't get that back either. It's just, boop, gone.
No, because we did it twice. We sent them we had a listed price and we didn't talk about price. So I was like, okay, half the time when people don't bring up price, they're going to pay asking. The other half, they're going to come here and then negotiate really, really hard, but they're just not playing their cards yet. So I was like, make sure before the guy plays his deposit, we send him a purchase agreement that shows our asking price. Well, we sent him a purchase agreement for $5,000 less. Mm. And I think I reviewed it and I didn't catch the error. So that's partly on me.
Nice.
And then we billed him out again when he got here at that same reduced price. And of course he didn't say anything. No, why would he say anything?
All right. So you really have no excuse. That's
yikes. So we cost ourselves $5,000. That's probably the first time we've done that and contracted to it. I always say a first digit dyslexia where like if a car is $250,000, I'll accidentally bill it at $150 or $350.
Gotcha.
But like people catch it. And that's why you never sign a contract when you send it, because it's not fully executed. Like, I've learned that. But, yeah, we signed this one and delivered the car and deposited the check. And then a week later, I was like, wait a minute.
Yikes.
And last one. Should know this by now.
Wait, is this all still this week?
Yeah. Last 10 days, basically.
Whew.
Yeah, it was a full moon last week, so it's... This is
where's Mercury and Gatorade too. Does that kind of help it?
Mercury and Gatorade?
Yeah.
I didn't know they put those chemicals in there. I mean, I don't drink Gatorade, but I try to drink water. Is it in that Liquid Death stuff too?
No, I'm not even drinking Liquid Death right now. I'm drinking a Topo Chico.
Oh, okay. Well, it's water under the bridge. If you spill it.
Don't threaten me with a good near time, bridge. Doug.
We took a deposit on a car, and then there was an issue in the pre-purchase inspection, which we figured out in one day wasn't an issue. Well, took about a week to confirm that it was an issue. But anyway, we refunded the deposit initially, and then we said, oh, wait, if this was the only issue preventing you from buying the car, if we can figure this out, do you still want to buy it? They're like, yes, 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 we really wanted this car. So I was like, okay, they paid for a pre-purchase inspection. They gave us a deposit. We refunded the deposit, but like they still signed a contract, went through all this stuff. They said they really want the car if we can get this issue sorted. It was an emissions thing, for, and they're in California, so valid. And it took a few days. We had to put a bunch of miles on it, make sure the code was clear, didn't come back, take it to the Porsche shop, have them plug their computers in. And it took like a week total to do all this stuff. And I confirmed and reconfirmed with the guy, and he emailed me like four times rechecking to see if we had figured the issue out yet. He's like, I'm ready to go. I want this car. Just, I need to make sure that it will pass emissions. So this Monday, we got him the screenshots, everything, said, okay, we're good. You good? You going to pay for it? He goes, well, I got to call the Porsche shop and just like make sure that what you sent me is legit and it will pass emissions. And 2 hours later, he goes, you know, it's not a really good time for me to spend $100,000 right now.
Oh, really? Uh-huh. So he probably told an important person in his life, maybe, he's going to make a big financial decision.
And like, again, it's on me because I didn't go back to him and say, okay, we refunded your deposit. The deal was off. Like, we're starting from square one. Do you want to place a deposit again to hold the car for us to sort this issue out with that one contingency? And I didn't, because I'm like, he already placed a deposit. We already did all this stuff. I made him verbally commit, confirm again, clearly, like, if this is fixed, are you buying the car? Are you paying for it? Yes. Done. Can't trust anyone's word. I've known that forever. Can't expect a customer to honor a verbal agreement. Have to place a deposit.
Just a nice little reminder.
So that car is still for sale because all the other people who were like, well, let us know if it doesn't sell. We want it. We want it. And, you know, it dragged on for so long that now they're like, man, well, I don't know. So yeah, lost all those deals. Been doing this 20 years. Should know better. But this is why we take deposits from people. And when people get mad because I sell the car out from under them because they didn't give us a deposit, they're like, well, I wanted the car. You should have known that. Well, I didn't know it because you didn't give me your credit card number. So anyway.
Whew, a little spice.
But Scaminator, it's been a little time since we've had one of these, which is where we try to spot scams. After 20 years in the business, I've become very good at this. And we had a guy who tried to trade in a 2005 Porsche this week with 20,000 miles. This was on Facebook Marketplace.
All right.
We're selling a 996 Turbo, about $65,000. So he says, can I trade in my 2005 Porsche with 20,000 miles? And I'm like, I mean, I don't know. Is it like a Cayenne or give me some more details? He said, well, it's one that I won in a raffle. And then he sends me a picture of a Carrera GT.
Interesting.
Yep.
I don't think they.
Okay. And he said, quote, don't know much about it. Was in a raffle years ago. I don't drive it much. Just want something different. Change it up a bit. It does not have turbos, naturally aspirated engine.
Yeah, definitely just want to change it up a bit from a Carrera GT.
Mm-hmm. To a 996.
Yeah.
Well, same steering wheel.
And gate, well, mostly the same gauges, same layout.
So I said, sure, yep, I'll do it. Even trade, no problem. Just send me the VIN number and a copy of the title. He's like, well, what hours are you guys open tomorrow? I'm like, 9 to 5. So he's like, I'll just stop by with the title. I'm like, yeah, no, you won't.
Oh,
but
so
just
close.
In case he did, I texted my whole crew and I was like, this guy might stop by tomorrow, like, and try to trade you a Carrera GT that doesn't exist for the 996 Turbo. I'm like, don't let him test drive it. Don't give him the time of day. Just
unless he rolls up in a Carrera GT.
Right.
What if it was like
actually brought it? I brought the title. I'm from Solon. I'm just around the corner, but I didn't bring the car. Why would I do that? This episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All-Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine. Get yours at SheffieldWatches.com and mention that you heard about them on Switchcast.
We're going to talk about speed limits.
Woo!
Again.
Nice.
But I've had a revelation this week that is a different discussion than all of the ones we've had on speed limits.
It's not because we're running out of topics?
No.
Nice.
And I have very little data to back this up, but I still think I'm right.
That is the most American thing you've ever said.
I'm holding a pen in my hand.
Continue. You look very intelligent right now.
Waving it. This makes me right. I might tap the mic stand in a minute. The problem with speeding is not speeding. It's with artificially low speed limits and arbitrary enforcement. Hear me out.
All right, go on. Show your work.
People equate a 25 mile an hour speed limit with, let's say, 40 miles an hour in their brain. Not knowingly, but that's how fast everyone is actually going. Nobody drives 25 miles an hour in a 25. Nobody drives 35 in a 35. Nobody drives 60 in a 60. The typical enforcement is 10 miles an hour over the speed limit. That's kind of the rule of thumb. There's some departments like Manaway that'll ticket you for one over.
So you take 1 inch past the sign.
Yes.
Woo!
There's other departments that are 15. And then it comes down to the individual cop. But there's, in general, and this is true with speed cameras, speed cameras are typically programmed to ticket you at 1 mile an hour over, 10 miles an hour over. So the real speed limit is 10 miles an hour more than the posted speed limit, which creates confusion because it's arbitrary. It's just like raising kids. If you say you need to do this the first time I tell you and then say, well, but really, I mean the second time I tell you, they're never going to respect you and obey you. But let's go back to this. People then think that they need a 25 mile an hour speed limit in all these places where 40 is a perfectly reasonable, safe, acceptable speed because they think that 25 is 40. Based on their brain, seeing people drive by and like subconsciously equating that speed to the posted speed limit, they then say, oh my gosh, 35 is way too fast. Because when they're in a 35 zone, people are going 50. And they don't want people going 50 through residential neighborhoods. So they go, we need 25. And then it makes criminals out of all the people going 36, when in reality, it's a perfectly safe and reasonable speed. If you don't believe me, you can do this test on your own. Drive exactly the speed limit, exactly the posted speed limit for one day. See how many people pile up behind you. See how much road rage you get. See how abnormally slow it is.
I mean, I will say, when I'm in a 25 and I'm going like 30, people still are up my bum.
Yes.
Constantly.
All of them. Even the Priuses.
Yeah, it's wild.
I followed a Prius into our neighborhood that could not negotiate the corner after the three-way stop. I think it was 8 to 10 miles an hour legitimately was going around the corner, and then they were going 38 to 40 down our straight, which is 25 miles an hour.
It's so hard to go 25 on your road.
It's nobody does. It's not a reasonable expectation, but the previous owners or somebody petitioned for this stretch to be 25. And here's my other case in point. Probably because when it was 35, people were going 50 plus, which is arguably too fast out here. There's a couple of blind crests and entrances past those. But I am an expert in speed approximation.
Nice.
Because I've played with a radar gun, so I've calibrated my brain. But
eyeballs.
We have a 25 mile an hour outside our house, and we can see like a long stretch of it because we're up on a hill. When people go by fast, and I mean like really fast, like a bunch of cops went by the other day, full code, flying. And she's like, oh my gosh, they must be going at least 45. I go, no, they're doing like 70, babe. They are hauling. But a light bulb went on and I go, well, she thinks they're doing 45 because they're going so much faster than everybody else. And she's equating everybody else that's actually doing 45 to doing 25. So she's seeing this relative difference in speed going, that's a dangerous speed. That's 45. 45 is dangerous. 25 isn't. And I'm going, no, that is 45. 45 is reasonable out here. Reasonably safe. 60 is crazy.
Yeah, 60 is nuts. I will say, though, there is a street near me that is very residential, and it like is essentially runs parallel to another residential street. The other street is 25, and that's like, okay, normal. The street I'm talking about is 35, and I never go 35. There's just like the road is kind of crappy, and it's all just houses and like people outside, and it just feels like I'm flying to go 35 through this like little stretch of this neighborhood. But that also feels so arbitrary. Why is that 35 and then one street over that looks the exact same as 25?
Jurisdiction, petitions, something. Who knows? Number of accidents, HOA complained, whatever it is. But like this concept of enforcing speed limits not at the speed limit and then resetting everyone's thinking damages when you actually should raise the speed limit and you don't allow people to. So therefore you make criminals out of people who are going what should be a natural speed limit, what should be the speed limit, because that's what the majority of people are traveling at because they deem it as a reasonable speed for that road because they're looking around and paying attention. Yeah, there's some people that just go like way too fast. I get it. But it's the 85-15 rule. You get 85% of people going within 15 miles an hour of each other.
I would like to think this is probably exacerbates the poor highway driving etiquette that we have, because somebody's like, well, it's 65 and I'm going 70. Nobody should be going any faster. Meanwhile, there's people rocketing by at 90 in the slow lane. I've got with my I'm driving a little bit more on the highway now than I ever used to, and it is astonishing to me how bad people are. And it is, I'm constantly on the defensive because nobody has lane discipline and everybody's going 20 miles an hour over the speed limit.
Yet they're all self-righteous about whatever lane they happen to be in or whatever speed they're going, whether it's 3 miles an hour under or 3 miles an hour over. I'm going 6 over. You shouldn't be going 10 over.
And it's just like, let it. That's what really grinds my gears.
Yeah. Even my dog knows, right?
He's a smart boy.
No, I'm serious. My dog has been trained to think that 45 is normal outside our house. Because if somebody goes by at 25, you know how I can tell? Because my dog starts barking at them because they're going. It's so abnormally slow that the dog thinks the person is turning into our house.
Oh, and he has to say hello in a very kind manner and calm manner.
Yeah. That's how slow 25 is as a speed limit. And that's proof that our perception is trained by observation subconsciously. My dog can estimate speed, and 25 is too slow in a 25. The 25 should be 35 or 40. But along with that, we should then enforce a speed limit as the speed limit and say, if it's 40, it's 40. Not this arbitrary, well, might be 5 over, you get a ticket, might be 10, might be 20, I don't know. Because then that creates enmity between people who choose to go 5 over but don't like other people going 10 over. Again, it's all arbitrary. We've set this system up for ourselves by setting too low speed limits in the first place and then arbitrarily enforcing them. And then the other problem is not just the perception of speeding, but the actual prosecution of it, right? So if you get in an accident that arguably shouldn't be your fault, oh, but you were speeding. You weren't actually going too fast. You were just going above the posted speed limit. So now it's your fault. Maybe it's not your fault, but somebody can go to court and pull the speed and go, oh, you were going 10 miles an hour over the speed limit. Well, the speed limit's set artificially low. Well, but you're going 10 miles an hour. So was everybody else, and so has everybody else been for the last century. No, but you're going to get sued in court because you were going over an arbitrary number that they set.
Hmm. I also hate it when places, we've had somewhere around here recently that has lowered a stretch of road from 35 to 30 because they think it's going to make things better. And it's so annoying because I just keep going the same speed, as does everybody else.
No, they'll make 30 their, is a their bottom line better. They can write more tickets.
Yeah.
Yeah, bump that quota up.
Anything lower than 25 is even skeptical, but I've seen like in some very like very residential, like specific communities, a 15 mile an hour speed limit that nobody enforces. There's no cops in there. It is hard to drive 15 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You have to focus so much on doing that, if that is what you choose to do, that you can't notice anything else going on. And like, what gear am I supposed to be in for that? For just like puddling along.
The one thing I did like about Scotland is where they had 20 or 30 mile an hour speed limits, I felt like that was really an appropriate speed, but they used them judiciously. It wasn't just like, oh, it's residential, it's 30. It was, you know, in town, built up areas and lots of people crossing the street and stuff like that and blind corners. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm good with 30.
Yeah,
I don't need
sense.
To go 32. Yep. But if I think if we really believe that speeding is a problem, which on this podcast, admittedly, we don't, I think the speed limits, well, first, the speed limit should be raised. But even if they're not, if we really believe it's a problem, which everybody says they does, but they don't in practice because everybody speeds, I think all departments and speed cameras and everything should enforce the limit like Manaway does at 1 mile an hour over. All the time, consistently. If you break the law, you break it, period. Mm. And if you actually did that, I think you would find out people would revolt and say, no, we have to raise the speed limits because they realize, oh my gosh, I have to drive this slow for real. This
like
is
every
speed
time
limit?
I go into
no
Manaway. I'm like, God, this sucks. Can I go somewhere else?
Yeah. So I guess the way to fix this is either raise the speed limits or lower the threshold for tickets, ticket everybody all the time, and then people will realize how regulated we are and go, no, bump those speed limits up.
At least then it's clear.
I would be okay with that. It is clear. I would still break the law and get lots of tickets, but in principle, I'd be like, yes, officer, you're right. Yep, okay.
100%.
Yep, this is consistent enforcement. Works with parenting. All right, brings us to the props and flops of the bye week, brought to you by Switch Cars.
And Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. You can find more information at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in Twinsburg, Ohio. Doug, what's the pick of the week?
Pick of the week is a 2006 BMW Z4 M Roadster.
Ethan.
Back when M was a real thing.
Upgrade.
30,000 miles, 6-speed manual. These are like really underrated cars, I think. Or maybe not. Maybe they're exactly a $30,000 car and everything else is overhyped.
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah.
Bring
maybe
down
the
car
term
prices.
Underrated is actually overused.
Yes.
Maybe the Z4 M is just a really fantastic driving experience for a normal amount of money.
No, I think the I think it's your previous point. Everything is so overpriced and so overrated that things are just normal. Everybody's like, oh my God, everybody's sleeping on this. It's like, no, that's about right.
No, they've had too much coffee on everything else.
Yes. Calm down.
Flop of the week. I found a video on Instagram sent to me by John Sabo showing why Ferrari charges $15,000 for their hand-painted badge option. It's going through all the different layers. Did you see this?
Is this one of the guys? No, but I'm going to guess. Is this a guy sitting in the factory with some dramatic music, and he's got one of those, like, painter's boards that you saw Bob Ross have, and he's sitting there with a paintbrush?
No. He has a spray gun.
That's,
and it's showing this process of taping it off, spraying it, taping it off again, basically like paint by numbers, but with a spray gun.
I mean, technically you're using a hand, but like, that's not really what you think of.
No.
I want to see brush strokes.
And that was the first comment on the post is, if it's 15 grand for hand painted, I want hand painted, no sprays. Because that's how they did it back in the day. They hand painted the racing livery on the cars. They hand painted the Scuderia Ferrari. Give me friggin' hand painted with all the imperfections and everything. But also, 15 grand is freaking insane for a logo. Like, that's Ferrari just proving why their shareholders love that company so much.
You could probably pay a beautifully skilled local painter to paint the shield on the side of the car, and it would be way less expensive and look way cooler.
And also, Ferrari would sue you because you're violating their trademark.
Well, details.
Yeah.
Make it a moose? I don't know. Oh, that didn't work
either. You couldn't resell it because it's paintwork. It's aftermarket. It's not factory. No! Yeah, I think they embed the serial number in their hand painted badge options.
Does this belong here?
Boy, prop of the week. Tyler, did you come up with one?
No, I was gonna say, great. Doug, it's blank.
I've got one.
Sweet
prop of the week. We're on a $1,500 car challenge road trip this week with Vin Wiki and some other people for a lot of people's birthdays. And we went to racetracks, including a dirt track in somebody's backyard, road course, mid pond. We toured museums. We did drag races. And our friend Nick Kruger and Chris Michaels brought a 1986 GMC fire truck. That was the vehicle they bought for $1,500.
When I first saw the photo of this, that I don't even remember who sent me, I thought it was just like on the side of the road. I didn't think it was actually someone's car.
No, it was awesome. They were burning, I think, 2 gallons of oil a day.
Oh,
multiple gallons of fluid through the diff. Definitely won the OPEC award, if it was such a thing. But they were not the slowest in any competition, except maybe the drag race.
Really?
Chris and Nick were wheeling that thing around all of the tracks.
All right.
Impressively drifting it. They were less than a second slower. They had a rolling start on this one, so whatever. Kind of not fair. But they were less than a second slower than my Honda Accord around the dirt track.
Wow.
Less than 1 second.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
Even with a rolling start, that's crazy.
I mean, it was like an 8 mile an hour rolling start. So maybe a couple second advantage, yeah. But
whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's impressive.
Very impressive. Props go to them. The rest of us got seemingly normal cars other than the Mercedes limo, but to bring a fire truck. Oh, they did the tail of the dragon on the fire truck.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That was actually miserable for them because it's very narrow. There's no room for
yes.
to slide it around like on a racetrack, and it's just constant lock to lock. So props to them for wheeling that thing around all week. Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.